You're listening to the newchurches.com Q&A podcast. New Churches is an online hub for the mission of church multiplication. Here you'll find the resources and training you need to get started, as well as a community of church planting and multi-site experts to help you thrive. My name is Daniel Im, and I'm here with Ed Stetzer.
That's not interrupting if I actually just introduce myself. So.
Yeah, there you go.
There is that one or two persons who really, oh, you're so mean, you interrupt Daniel. I'm like, oh my gosh.
It's our friends. Yeah, it's our thing now. So
I just want to say. Let me just say that I'm not agreeing with you that that's our thing. I am glad that this is a thing that we do together. How about that? We'll clarify.
Whatever makes you feel better, Ed.
Whatever makes me feel better throughout the day. It's kind of a cross-border friendship. You know, you're this Canadian socialist living in the workers' paradise with universal health care for free and a goods and services tax that's off the window, and I'm living down here. So,
it was fun, though, to have Carrie Newhoff on for a Q&A webinar for Plus members. You're just surrounded by Canadians.
It was. Well, listen, dude, I'm telling you, I'm surrounded by Canadians at home. Canadian Central, but yeah. That's okay. I don't think the kids, even though the kids technically are Canadian citizens because of the change in the Citizenship Act, they don't think of them. Matter of fact, when we first told them that was the case, matter of fact, if you're interested, people can go Google Waking Up Canadian because my children are covered under that act. My daughter was like, but I don't want to go. I'm like, well, they're not going to come get you, sweetie.
So have none of them claimed their citizenship then?
Well, actually, the oldest one, we think she's going to go to McGill.
Okay. Which is a good university.
You don't know. It's a good school. Yeah. And so do her master's there. And so we're going to claim it when she's ready to go there because tuition is remarkably expensive.
Yeah. Especially if you're a Quebec resident. It's like $2,000 a year.
Wherever she decides to land, that's the residency. So yes. My daughter, who doesn't speak French, may soon be a Quebecois.
Yeah.
And so
well,
my
bienvenue.
Ridiculous French accent. Yes, thank you. That's right. You lived in Montreal.
Yes, that's right. So, all right.
Let's better get to our question.
Yeah, let's do our question.
Hi, guys. This is Greg Wilson, an American in Manchester, England. So here's my question for today. How should, in a mother-daughter church plant, how should the mother give to the daughter? Hopefully, people are involved. If people are involved, are there additional resources on top of that? What kind of time, what kind of energy, affections, things like that? Just how ought they to resource their new plant? Thanks a lot.
So Greg Wilson, we've answered multiple of his questions. He's our American friend who lives and is church planting in Manchester, England. And this is a pretty neat question and a very helpful one, and one that we need to be wrestling through, just the relationship between the mother, daughter, church plant, and just all the logistics that go into that. So what are some of your thoughts, Ed?
Yeah, well, I think it's good stuff. I think, first of all, Manchester. I've never been to Manchester. Now I want to go to Manchester because we have friends there, and that would be awesome to be there. Do you know any famous people from Manchester?
David Beckham.
Okay, that's fine. The most important one, though, is Davy Jones, the lead singer of the Monkees. You don't remember the Monkees? Hey, hey, we're the Monkees.
Yes, I remember them. Yeah. I thought you were going to say someone more spiritual, so you kind of...
Oh, I threw you off.
You were at the same level, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe true. I mean, there's different people that are from there, I'm sure, but I just remember that one. So another story for another day. All right, so here's our interesting fact, fun fact to know and tell. So when I was a seminary professor, my first time, I served 3 years at a seminary, which were long years. That wasn't the right gig for me. And but when I served there, one of the more fascinating things was we had an intro to church planning course, and then we followed that with a advanced kind of case studies in church planning. So they were, the case studies were kind of, how does it work? The case studies were sort of like you'd look at a church and look at it. And one of the patterns I found emerging, that is for the emerging church, so I don't mean it that way. One of the patterns we found emerging was that there was a very clear sense that the mother church-daughter church relationship was fractured all the time. So I started watching this. Hmm. And I did this for like 2 years. I didn't have it the first year. I'm trying to remember the exact details. This was a while ago. But here's what we found. So about 7 out of 10. Now again, don't like write that in an article that's 7 out of 10 or whatever. but about 7 out of 10 people that were actually relationships actually were broken. So 7 out of 10 people were broken here. And it was fascinating to see. So there was a recurring theme that what would happen is they hadn't clarified something. So you remember when you helped us redo, when we redid the second edition of Planning Missional Churches. In the first edition, I talked about how you've got to have clarity of theology. How far different can you be? You know, I mean, you can be different in some ways. You know, you might, you know, have a nuance here or there. How far different can you be? Authority, who makes what decisions? I mean, can the daughter church decide this or that? And then I can't remember the other one off the top of my head. So it's, and then maybe it was just staff relationships or something like that. So I think the mother church thing is fraught with peril. I said that like a person from Manchester. It's fraught with peril whilst we take this journey. But I think ultimately it can be a wonderful thing. So back to what he was saying, I think there are some real super healthy ways to be a mother church. For example, if there's alignment, I'm not saying it is, but if there's alignment between the mother and daughter church, we're going to use mother and daughter throughout because typically we refer to the church as a her, so mother and daughter. If there's alignment, then, you know, you got people with a similar passion. So when we planted Grace Church, we sent families to help Jess Rayner plant a church out of our church, including someone in our pastoral apprentice team. And I think one or two families moved. But it was just, you know, Jess was part of the planting of Grace Church. So he sort of had the same values and DNA. The difficulty is when there's a difference in the values and the DNA. And if that's the case, there's still other ways you can get involved. For example, you can get involved financially. I don't think a mother church, I mean, sometimes you want to plant a church, you can't find a mother church, your denomination requires you to have one, and you got sort of a, I don't know, like a fig leaf covering your nakedness, not having a mother church. So there's that sometimes. But a real mother church, I think, should be involved financially. I think should one way to get involved is send a SWAT team, special, willing, and temporary, where they come for 6 months, a year, or 18 months, help with the nursery, do those sort of things. Maybe, you know, maybe they're doing a baby shower for the new church. I love seeing this, where a new church is about to be planted. And then what happens is actually people will take the time to gather like a party at the mother church. And at that party, they actually it's literally they get like nursery equipment. So the nursery equipment can sort of be there. You know, so all those things I think are pretty neat ways to do that. And lots more. What would you add?
Yeah. So when you look at the whole mother-daughter relationship, you're right. Because on the one hand, it can be if there's alignment in values, and
you gotta say it can be fraught with peril.
It definitely can be.
With peril.
Fraught with peril.
Whilst we work for a better kingdom work.
So though that's the case, though it can be like that, if there's not an alignment, if there is, you're right. I mean, it can be a very good and healthy relationship, and with you know, sending out a SWAT team. So there's time, there's finances, there's energy. But what do you think about the time though, right? Because oftentimes in a good situation, and we can talk about the bad one later, but in the good situation, the mother is really doing a lot of resourcing at the beginning. Should that really be a 1 year time period, a 6 month time period? How do you think that should actually look like the more independent that church gets over the years?
Well, it does grow in independence. And so I think that that is largely determined by the state of the daughter church and the agreement between the mother and the daughter church. So I think that there probably will still remain a mother-daughter relationship as long as the daughter church is not self-sufficient. So I think working towards self-sufficiency is really super key. And once self-sufficiency is attained, now typically in my denominational tradition, we talk about a church sort of organizing itself. And that means theologically, what happens is a church moves from an extension of another church, right? So when my church is the mother church of a daughter church, that daughter church is really part of our church. And so the members are members of our church. The elders are ministering to and caring for that church as part of our church. So it's sort of like our church in another location with the intent of it being born. It's sort of, if you will, in utero. And then when it's born, it's still a toddler under the care. Now, I don't mean that in a patronizing way. I mean that in the sense that it still doesn't keep its own finances. We would generally keep the finances. People would become members of the mother church. And then, at least in my theological tradition, then what happens is we organize the church, and part of that is having a covenant. So when the church, and typically the church both covenants and is self-supporting, around or in similar times. And at that point, when they covenant self-support, then they're a separate autonomous congregation. Now, again, all the Anglicans are like, well, no, not autonomous congregations. But actually, in a sense, this it's not dissimilar in an Anglican tradition, where ultimately it gets to the place where, how do you put this? Where you would move to, in an Anglican tradition, I was just down at Church of the New Covenant, Winter Springs, Florida, which is a church that discipled me as a teenager, an Anglican church now. but when they started a daughter church, we actually talked to Carl Buffington, the pastor there, and they started our church. It was part of New Covenant until then. What happens is the daughter church will actually be separated, and then it's a separate church. I might not use the term autonomous because they have a diocesan bishop, but yeah, I think ultimately that's what we're looking ultimately towards.
Yeah, that's fascinating because you really have on the one end where it's, hey, I'm just gonna support you. Here's finances, go get them, right? Go get them. Go do your own thing. If you need any help, call. We're here. We'll be some sense of accountability. You kind of have that disparate or distanced style of a mother-daughtering relationship where it's kind of like, hey, I need in order for me to be assessed and sent out, I need to have a mother church. Who wants to do this for me? And you try to get as many stickers, you know, supporters on your
NASCAR.
Exactly. As possible.
Do you even know what NASCAR is? Is that even
I
thing?
Do. Okay, so yes.
Cultural moment.
And then on the complete other side, you have what you just explained where there's, it almost, honestly, it reminded me of a few of those churches who are saying, hey, we're going to use campusing as a way to as a strategy to plant, right? Not to that extent, but you have some churches who are saying,
you know, I don't like that so much. You know, I don't like
No, I do. But there are churches who are saying, hey, with a 5-year run or a 10-year run, now obviously it's going way further than what you just described, right? Runway wise, but there definitely is this perspective on, okay, what does a mother-daughtering relationship look like?
Yeah, no question. And I would say that, I mean, basically, gosh, I forget who you first used this language, but you're talking about the difference between what sometimes we call parachute planting and hiving off. So yeah. If you're hiving off, if he's in Manchester and some other church going to send 30 people, and that's hiving off. As a matter of fact, you might not even need all the entrepreneurial church planting skills to do that. But I think ultimately the path that we're on leads us to ultimately get to another church. Now, there's a difference between, and I'm not anti-multi-site. What I'm saying, you know that. What I'm saying is I want to be careful that we don't see them as one or the other. Now, if the intent is we're going to plant a campus and eventually hive it off, then let's make it a church plant from the beginning. And I think that could be a beautiful thing.
Yeah. So I'm glad we were able to tackle this question. And Greg or anyone else in our audience, if you have follow-up questions on that, be sure to submit them at speakpipe.com/newchurches, or you can go to newchurches.com and hit the sidebar on the right that says send a voicemail. Well, thanks again for listening, and be sure to catch us next time.